The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Hello and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. Our first article is from AtlasObscura.com. New England is crisscrossed with thousands of miles of stone walls. That's enough to circle the globe four times. By Anna Kusmer, May 4th, 2018. Walk into a patch of forest in New England, and chances are you will, almost literally, stumble across a stone wall. Thigh high, perhaps. It is cobbled together with stones of various shapes and sizes, with splotches of lichen and spongy moss instead of mortar. Most of the stones are what are called two-handers, light enough to lift, but not with just one hand. The wall winds down a hill and out of sight. According to Robert Thorson, a landscape geologist at University of Connecticut, these walls are damn near everywhere in the forest of rural New England. He estimates that there are more than 100,000 miles of old, disused stone walls out there, or enough to circle the globe four times. Who would build a stone wall, let alone hundreds of thousands of miles of them, in the middle of the forest? No one. The walls weren't built in the forest, but in and around farms. By the middle of the 19th century, New England was over 70% deforested by settlers, a rolling landscape of small holdings as far as the eye could see. But by the end of the century, industrialization and large-scale farms led thousands of fields being abandoned, to begin a slow process of reforestation. New England had great pastures, said Thorson. It was a beef, butter, bacon economy. As farmers cleared those New England forests, they found rocks, lots and lots of them. The glaciers that receded at the end of the last ice age left behind millions of tons of stone in a range of sizes. New England soils remain notoriously stony today. When life gives you stones, build a wall. Farmers pulled these plow-impeding stones from their fields and piled them on the edges. The farmer's main interest was his fields, says Thorson. The walls are simply a disposal pile. It was routine farm work. This process was replicated at thousands of farms across the region, a collective act of labor on a glacial scale. The supply of stone seemed endless. A field would be cleared in the autumn, and there would be a whole new crop of stones in the spring. This is due to a process known as frost heave. As deforested soils freeze and thaw, stones shift and migrate to the surface. People in the Northeast thought that the devil had put them there, says Susan Allport, author of the book, Sermons in Stone, The Stones of Walls of New England and New York. They just kept coming. Wall building peaked in the mid-1800s when, Thorson estimates, there were around 240,000 miles of them in New England. That amounts to roughly 400 million tons of stone, or enough to build the Great Pyramid of Giza, more than 60 times over. No one dedicates more time to thinking about these walls than Thorson, who has written a children's book, a field guide, and countless articles about them since he first moved to New England in 1984. Thorson, bald and bearded, a mossy stone himself, is a landscape geologist, and he distinctly remembers his first walks in the New England woods and coming across one stone wall after another. His mind was full of questions about what they were and who built them. It was a phenomenon that was extraordinary, he says. One thing led to another, and I got obsessed on the topic. Thorson started the Stonewall Initiative in 2002, aimed at educating the public about this distinctive feature of their forest, in addition to conserving the walls and studying how they impact the landscape around them. Thorson has built a reputation as the ultimate expert on this phenomenon. You know how a natural history museum would have a person who identifies stuff for you? I'm kind of that guy for stone walls, he says. Every year, he takes his students to a maple beech forest stand in Storrs, Connecticut, which he calls the Glen, to look at a classic farmstead stone wall. This wall is thigh high and mostly built of gneiss and schist, metamorphic rocks common in the valley flanks of central New England. With Thorson's help, one begins to see a little structure in how the stones were stacked, in messy tiers, by a farmer who added one load at a time. Thorson may be particularly obsessed with the walls, but he's not alone in the interest. He is constantly invited to speak at garden clubs, historical societies, public libraries, and more. The interest doesn't die down, he says. 20 years later, it's still going on. His field guide, Exploring Stone Walls, is a directory of some of the most unusual, interesting, or distinctive walls in the region. The tallest example is a mortared seawall beneath the Cliff Walk in Newport, Rhode Island, measuring over 100 feet. The oldest wall, in Popham Point, Maine, dates to 1607. Thorson's favorite historically significant wall is at the Old Manse, a historic home in Concord, Massachusetts. It provided cover for Minutemen firing on the British during the Revolutionary War. Thorson also highlights Robert Frost's Mending Wall, located on his farm in Derry, New Hampshire, the inspiration for the famous line, "Good fences make good neighbors." Thorson knows about as much as one can know about the world wonder scale web of walls across the Northeast. But there remains much to learn, particularly in terms of what they mean for ecosystems, such as their role as both habitat and impediment to wildlife, and their effect on erosion and sedimentation. It sounds silly, he says, but we almost know nothing about them. Geographer and landscape archaeologist Katherine Johnson earned her doctorate mapping stone walls from above, using LIDAR, light detection and ranging technology. LIDAR is similar to radar, only instead of using radio waves to detect objects, it uses light. Laser pulses, thousands per second, are emitted from a specially equipped plane. There are so many of these pulses that some are able to hit the small spaces between leaves and penetrate all the way to the forest floor, even through thick tree cover. Johnson's LIDAR images reveal the extent of those crisscrossing stone walls in a way nothing else can. Her research shows that, stripped of the region's resurgent forest, the walls provide a snapshot of 19th century history, a map of what land was cleared and farmed at the time. Combined with other data on the forests themselves, this can help specialists model historic forest cover, and in turn, help ecologists understand how forests grow back after they have been disturbed or cleared entirely. The walls can hold the key to New England's social history, including settlement patterns and farming styles. They provide a static backdrop against which change can be measured. Stone walls are the most important artifacts in rural New England, Thorson says. They're a visceral connection to the past. They are just as surely a remnant of a former civilization as a ruin in the Amazon rainforest. Each of the millions of stones that make up New England stone walls was held by a person, usually a subsistence farmer, or perhaps a hired Native American or slave. What remains is a trace of countless individual acts etched on the landscape. Those labors, says Allport, hundreds of years later, they endure. That was New England is Crisscrossed with Thousands of Miles of Stones by Anna Kussmer, May 4th, 2018. Our next article is from earthmagazine.org. The History, Science, and Poetry of New England's Stone Walls by John Manuel Andreotti, May 13, 2014. In 2007, I returned to Eastern Connecticut, where I grew up. Driving north on Interstate 395, past towns like Norwich and Griswold, I was struck by the many old gray stone walls tumbling off into the forest along the highway. Realizing that the trees in those forests weren't particularly old, I surmised that those forests had once been cleared farmlands. Casually wondering what had happened to the farms led to a journey of discovery through the forests and fields of New England. My journey started with the book, Stone by Stone, The Magnificent History of New England Stone Walls, by University of Connecticut geology professor Robert M. Thorson. Thorson, known to colleagues and friends as Thor, says he was smitten by the stone walls after moving his family from Alaska to Connecticut in 1984. At first, studying them was just a hobby for Thorson. "It wasn't my job," he said. "I had been teaching and researching. I ran a lab with graduate students and had funded projects. But I got interested in these stone walls as landforms, so I kept working at it." In 2002, Thorson published Stone by Stone, his first book on the topic, and he and his wife Christine founded the Stonewall Initiative in conjunction with the publication, which Thorson describes as the first geoarchaeological study of New England stone walls. Like the book, the initiative aims to promote scientific understanding of the walls and advocate for their protection as cultural and ecological resources. Since the book's launch, Thorson has spoken to thousands of stonewall enthusiasts, authored numerous articles on the subject, and seen his book become the basis of a documentary called Passages of Time. On a brilliant afternoon in January 2014, I joined Thorson for a guided tour of the stone walls in Brooklyn, Connecticut. The area features many notable stone walls in large part because of its proximity to what Thorson calls the Geological and Agricultural Center of Interior New England, which provided abundant stones of the perfect size and shape to make them. Thorson notes in Exploring Stone Walls, his 2005 field guide, that January is one of the best times in southern New England for stone wall viewing. "Like a negative to a photograph," he writes, "walls are most visible when life is most invisible. Typically, this occurs in January, when snow frames the wall from bottom to top, and when the strengthening, crystal clear sun casts strong shadows. As we toured the walls, I learned their history. It begins with glaciers during the last ice age, meanders through the colonial and early New England farming eras, ebbs during industrialization in America, as the walls were abandoned and fell into disrepair, and continues today with the memorialization in poetry and refurbishment. Glacial origins. The origins of New England's wall stones date back to between about 30,000 and 15,000 years ago, when the Laurentide ice sheet, a remnant of which still exists in the Barnes Ice Cap on central Baffin Island, made its way southward from central Canada and then began retreating. It stripped away the last of the ancient soils, writes Thorson in Stone by Stone, scouring the land down to its bedrock, lifting up billions of stone slabs and scattering them across the region. As the ice sheet melted and receded, it left behind deposits of unsorted material, ranging in size from clay to massive boulders chiseled from the slate, schist, granite, and gneiss bedrock of northern New England and Canada. The bucolic rolling hills and meadows of New England are formed of rich glacial soil called lodgment till, up to 60 meters thick, that was almost single-handedly responsible for the success of the agricultural economy in New England, Thorson says. A thinner, looser layer of rocks and sand called ablation or meltout till was left above the lodgment till. Most stone walls are composed of stones from meltout till, which were abundant, large, angular, and easy to carry, Thorson says, compared to the smaller, more rounded stones from the deeper lodgment till. Although New England stone walls are popularly associated with the colonial era, there weren't actually many rocks lying around in the soil at that time. As evidence, Thorson cites Swedish botanist Peter Kalm, who toured New England in the mid-1700s. In his Travels in North America, Kalm observed of its forest soils. The Europeans coming to America found a rich, fine soil before them, lying loose between the trees as the best in a garden. They had nothing to do but to cut down the wood, put it up in heaps, and to clear the dead leaves away. Likewise, colonial-era books on farming, encyclopedias, and recorded observations do not mention stone walls, Thorson notes. Instead of stone walls, colonial farmers used rail and zigzag fences made of wood, far more abundant at the time than stone, to pen animals. It wasn't until the latter half of the 18th century that early stone walls were first widely constructed in New England. Even then, other than in long-farmed interior areas such as Concord, Massachusetts, the stone was typically quarried or taken from slopes rather than from fields. The region's stones lay deep in the ground, buried under thousands of years' worth of rich composted soil and old-growth forests, just waiting to be freed by pioneers clear-cutting New England's forests, a process that reached its peak across most of New England between 1830 and 1880. Deforestation and exhumation. Heating an average-sized New England farmhouse during the late 18th and early 19th centuries, which coincided with the waning years of the Little Ice Age, the unusually cool climatic period that lasted from the mid-1300s to the mid-1800s required burning up to 35 cords of cut wood a year. Considering that one cord is 3.6 cubic meters of wood, it is easy to understand why New England's cold winters, along with the construction of all those farm buildings, meant the demise of vast swaths of forest. Widespread deforestation exposed New England soils to winter cold. Scientists estimate winter was 1 to 1.5 degrees Celsius colder on average during the Little Ice Age than it is today, causing them to freeze deeper than they had before. This accelerated frost heaving and gradually lifted billions of stones up through the layers of soil toward the surface. These stones weren't conducive to farming, so, aided by their oxen, farmers hauled the stones to the outer edges of pastures and tillage lands, typically unceremoniously dumping them in piles that delineated their fields from the forest. Some of these so-called dumped walls would later be relaid more intentionally when improved tools and equipment made rebuilding easier. In the early days, artistry in stone wall building had to wait. The first priority was survival, which meant clearing land to grow crops and raise livestock. The types of stones and their abundance may have been familiar to those early farmers, who were mainly from the British Isles, Thorson says, because rock in New England is similar to rock in England and Scotland. England and New England have similar natural landscapes because both lands have a similar geologic history. Millions of years ago, England and New England were formed within the same mountain range. So, he says, the similar field stones on opposite sides of the Atlantic recreated practically within the same foundry. But there was one important difference between these New World and Old World stones. Britain had long been deforested, with its subterranean stones brought to the surface, so its stone walls had been constructed hundreds, if not thousands, of years earlier. Monumental effort. Although the oldest documented stone wall in New England dates to 1607, made by English settlers of the Virginia Company along the estuary of the Kennebec River north of Portland, Maine. Most of the region's stone walls were built in the Revolutionary period between 1775 and 1825, a period that Thorson calls the Golden Age of Stone Wall Building. By then, the effects of deforestation on the soil were being fully felt. Established farms were churning up tons of stones that had to be removed. Simultaneously, a post-Revolutionary War baby boom provided an abundance of young hands to help move them. During this period, thousands of stone walls were built and thousands more were improved. Thorson writes in Stone by Stone that farmers throughout the region began to look inward at their farms, not as safe havens from war, but out of pride in being American. Their pride was reflected in the way they painstakingly refashioned the piles of stone and primitive dumped walls along their property lines into the now classical double walls, parallel rows of stone filled in with small stones. Constructing the walls was labor-intensive. For comparison, modern masons typically lay about 6 meters of stone wall per day, Thorson says. He estimates that 40 million man-days of labor would have been required to build the more than 380,000 kilometers of stone walls in New England, enough to build a wall from Earth to the Moon, reported by an 1871 fencing census. This is an awesome amount of manual labor, he says, but it is trivial when compared to the much larger effort of getting stones to the edges of the fields in the first place. That job usually had been done stone by stone and load by load by the previous generation. Over a couple of generations, New England's vast stone wall network was erected, and by the 1830s to 1840s, farms were also well established, and farmers were no longer clearing as much land, said Christy Higginbottom, a research historian at Old Sturbridge Village, in the documentary Passages of Time. Old Sturbridge Village is a living museum of 1830s rural New England life located in Sturbridge, Massachusetts. As the 19th century progressed, changes in farming, in the nature of work, and in the political climate in the country all profoundly affected New England's stone walls. The Industrial Revolution and the decline of farms. Farming was ubiquitous in colonial America. Generations of subsistence farmers cleared and wrung their family's nourishment from the land. Shortly after the Revolutionary War, however, that began to change. The establishment in 1787 of America's first cotton mill, the Beverly Cotton Manufactory in Beverly, Massachusetts, launched one of the greatest transformations and population shifts in the young nation's history. The American Industrial Revolution brought to New England cities thousands of young women and girls in particular, who left behind their cooking, spinning, weaving, and various other farm chores to earn money for their families as hired laborers in the region's proliferating textile mills. Farming itself was also changing dramatically with the invention of new tools, such as a cast iron plow, and a more scientific approach to farming that maintained the soil's fertility. Even these tools couldn't help farmers recover from the so-called year without a summer in 1816, when the massive eruption of Mount Tambora in Indonesia in 1815 ejected ash and particulates into the global atmosphere, causing a volcanic winter that devastated crops. Between the loss of the year's harvest and the start of an industrial depression in 1819, many more New Englanders abandoned their farms, and with them the stone walls, to push westward into New York, Ohio, and beyond. By mid-century, the exodus from the farms caused what Thorson calls a psychological curtain to descend upon the land and a biological curtain to arise as vegetation overgrew many neglected old walls. If you walk away from walls in an open landscape, if there are no cows to keep field mode, he says, the walls are going to get covered with brush very quickly, and they're going to disappear. The white pines are going to shoot up. Within a decade of walking away from them, you're going to have trouble seeing them. Reclaiming and romancing the stone. As early as 1850, naturalist Henry David Thoreau revealed in his journal how the rural stone walls had already come to represent something important about the character of New England. We are never prepared to believe that our ancestors lifted large stones or built thick walls, he wrote. How can their work be so visible and permanent, and themselves so transient? When I see a stone, which it must have taken many yoke of oxen to move, lying in a bank wall, I am curiously surprised, because it suggests an energy and force of which we have no memorials. During the colonial revival of the early 20th century, Americans, particularly those well off enough to reimagine the nation's past as a series of idealized Curia and Ives lithographs, began to collect artifacts of that past, such as old farm tools, and to reconstruct early villages. People refurbished royal stone walls on properties that had been abandoned generations earlier. It was American poet laureate Robert Frost, perhaps more than anyone else, who imbued New England stone walls with mythological significance. Frost's poetry helped solidify the heroic, all-American image of the Yankee farmer, independent, self-reliant, and resilient, standing up defiantly to the relentless stone. Thorson says that for Frost, stone walls were more than symbols. They were oracles. We will continue this article next week. That's all for this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.